choosing this day whom we will serve. Welcome to Abounding Grace. On behalf of Abounding Grace Radio, here is our teacher and pastor, Chris Gordon.
There is a question tonight that is posed in verse 37 that I believe speaks to just how we should understand what is going on here and how powerful the Son of God is. The people ask a question. Remember the heart of John. John's gospel is with the aim that you would believe. The people ask a question, the Jews. Could not this man, who's opened the eyes of the blind, also have kept this man from dying? He's healed the blind. He's given sight to him, but he can't overcome death. You know, he weeps over this man, and he can do nothing about it. Jesus John has shown the Lord Jesus on this great mission from the beginning to seek and to save that which is lost. And he's been going all throughout the region, and Jesus has healed sick people. He's fed in the wilderness 5,000. He has given sight to the blind. He has healed a man who was sick for 38 years at the pool of Bethesda. And the great enemy now, before things transition and Jesus gets into many of the teachings that we're going to study here in John and in the high priestly prayer and these things and the events that precede his death, the last one of the great enemies that he confronts as he goes along is the enemy now of death. Is the Son of God strong enough to defeat death? That's the question of the text. That's the issue John wants you to wrestle with. Is he strong enough for you even to overcome death? And just like we've been seeing in John, just like we've been studying the whole way through, Jesus again in this section brings mass conflict. He separates. I mean, this event, as awesome as it is, only served to further the division. In fact, isn't it shocking? He's going to raise a man from the dead. And you know what the Jews are going to do with this? What do you read in your title to the next section? The plot to kill Jesus, the plot to kill Lazarus. And you say, what? This is going to be the result of this. They want to kill Jesus, and they want to destroy the one whom we raised from the dead. You now understand when the man was in hell and he said, send somebody back, you know. They'll believe. Not even if somebody came back from the dead will they believe. And that's what we saw last time, what the Son of Man has to do to the heart, what Jesus has come to do, that he has come, his sheep will hear, his sheep will be saved. And that's the beauty of this. In light of all this, only those who believe, this became one of the most glorious and the most special moments in his earthly ministry, aside from his own resurrection, which is what all this is showing us tonight. Because Jesus was declaring that everyone who believes in him, for them, he has overcome and conquered this enemy of death. So tonight, as we open this, you know, there really isn't anything more comforting, and there's so much practical application here surrounding this event that is so good for us tonight to again jump into. In the first few verses here of John chapter 11, you have two distraught women. Very distraught. Mary and Martha. They're distraught because their brother Lazarus has fallen sick. Not really told what it was. Whatever it is, in this day, they didn't have the kind of medicine that we do. This was fast moving. And they come to him in verse 3. And the sisters sent to him saying, Lord, behold, he whom you love is sick. It's an interesting inclusion there, isn't it? As you look at that and look at the surrounding context, because essentially their appeal is, this is not an unbeliever. This is a believer. He's sick. You love him. They've seen Jesus' power. Nobody had ever, since the beginning of the world, made a man see in chapter 9. And he's doing this all over the region. Here's one, Lord. You love him. I'm deeply moved by that, you know, because it was really evident who Jesus loved. It was really evident who Jesus loved. And think of the connection. He had just said in chapter 10, I give my life for my sheep. I lay down my life for them. I know them. They follow me. They come to me. And Jesus knew Lazarus. Lazarus had come. Lazarus had followed. And essentially, the cry that is coming out here by the sisters is, this one you love who's followed you is sick. Come, heal him. In verse 4, we're getting into the intention of the Lord for this whole sickness. And we've already studied this in chapter 9. Remember, you know, they wrestled with the issue, the disciples, of whether somebody had a certain disease or sickness because they're a bad sinner. And again, we come to this great same truth that the Lord again instructs them with in verse 4. This sickness is not unto death, but for the glory of God, that the Son of God may be glorified through it. So Jesus is giving insight in that whatever's going to happen with all the details of this sickness, whatever Lazarus is going to have to undergo, God's intention in it is that he would be glorified. So he says, this sickness is not unto death. Now remember, Jesus had been saying this already. You'll remember when he said back, and the Pharisees raged at him in chapter 8 when he said, if anyone keeps my word, he shall never see death. Jesus has already taught this. Jesus has already said this. And Jesus now is emphasizing this again. So the thing that's emphasized up front too here that we can't leave is really the emphasis of his love. The one whom you love, verse 3. Verse 5, now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. It's the love of Christ, the love that Jesus has for his sheep, that's driving this whole section. Immediately when we hear that, you know, we're thinking, whatever Lazarus is going to face, whatever grief Mary is going to face, whatever grief Martha is going to face, whatever they're going to have to endure through this, the one thing that shines that the Lord didn't want them to miss through it all is that he loved them. That's really important. That's really powerful. That's what's going to be shown. In verse 6, when he heard that he was sick, he stayed 2 more days in the place where he was. Then after this, he said to the disciples, let us go to Judea again. It doesn't take much to figure out what's going on there. He stayed. He purposely stayed behind, and he left Lazarus to die. He left Lazarus to die in the land of Judea while he stayed in this region beyond the Jordan. What I can't help but see here tonight as I study this and looked at this is that Jesus is teaching something absolutely fundamental about life and death just in these opening verses here. And the basic truth that we already know and we considered this morning, that is that nothing happens by chance. And that even though Jesus is not present here in the sickness of Lazarus and his death, as awful as it was, as painful as it was, as tragic as it was so suddenly to come upon Lazarus and the sisters, without Jesus there, he's teaching us that there is this grand purpose for the glory of God to be revealed. Now, at this point, the text really leaves us on the edge of our seats because of the danger of Jesus' own life comes to the forefront. The disciples say to him, "Rabbi, lately the Jews sought to stone you, and you're going to go there again? Are there not 12 hours in the day?" says Jesus. "If anyone walks in the day, he does not stumble because he sees the light of the world. But if anyone walks in the night, he stumbles because the light is not in him." This has been a big issue in John. This has been a real big issue because in chapter 7, he wouldn't just walk out openly into the feast. Remember? He said, "I can't just do that because I testify their works are evil. They want to stone me." But then he went up to the feast. And the point that he made there, the point that Jesus was teaching, was that every bit of Jesus' mission, every bit of that was designed, purposed, and planned so that he could not depart any step from the time, the steps, the place, the when, the how, the why. All of it had been predetermined before he had ever come to earth. And so Jesus is here teaching. He's here instructing them that he's on the Father's schedule. And no matter how it goes, no matter what happens to you, Jesus is saying, when you're walking in the will of God, and think of his disciples, he's teaching them right now, you'll never stumble. No matter what happens, you'll never stumble. The path that the Father gave the Son was the path of death. So what transpires? Lazarus dies. In verse 14, Jesus says it plainly. Lazarus is dead. Wasn't talking about sleep. Lazarus has died. So he comes to them and he finds, as he comes to this place where they've all gathered around and there's a great mourning, that Lazarus has been now in the tomb for 4 days. How many times, we look at this. This is really tragic. You know, how many times have we seen these kind of scenes? And this is, that's not normal to what we think is the course of life. In other words, he died prematurely. None of this was expected, and something is not right. It all could have been prevented. And I want to paint the scene for you a minute. It's wrong. It's too early. The sisters are devastated. The Jews are all gathered around, and there's nothing but awful silence. As a pastor, I've told you before, the worst place, I absolutely loathe funeral homes. I loathe them. I hate going in them. It's an awful, awful scene and an awful feeling of emptiness. Add to that the feelings and the pains of knowing that the person who died, you know, we're all kind of used to a natural course of things, you know. We're used to people in their 80s and 90s going. But we're not used to the sudden tragedies of life that make no sense. Add to that, if a doctor has made an awful mistake and cost someone's life, an unexpected accident. Just this past week, you know, I was horrified to read in the news of this Pennsylvania home that, you know, it's early in the morning, the mom goes out to milk cows, the dad's been working all night, he falls asleep, and there are 7 kids in the house, the thing catches on fire, and they're all burned. That's an awful funeral. That'd be an awful place to be. I don't know if there's anything that would be worse than to have to deal with something like that as parents. You know, emptiness, pain. I don't get it. And the pain of it all comes out, right? To think, Jesus could have been here and stopped this. That's what's in their minds. Jesus comes upon the scene. The whole thing seems to have escaped him. Here's their great and powerful king. Here's their Lord. And he did nothing about this. And look at the scene. Feel the scene. Feel the pain. feel the emptiness. Flowers, nice music, good decor doesn't cover the awful eeriness of death. That's what they're facing. We're confronted here tonight, as I read this and I study this, as to whether we really pay lip service to the providence and the sovereignty of God, you know. The Lord comes upon the scene. Jesus had said, the Son of God will be glorified through this. This death will be for the glory of God. But he comes and he finds them in the funeral home setting. He comes and it's dark and there's nothing but tears. Incredible for them. It's an irreconcilable dilemma tonight, isn't it? How in the world, if Jesus is all powerful, he has said such a sickness is not unto death, and the fact of the matter is he's dead. That's what's the fact. Jesus said something, doesn't seem to correspond to reality. To Mary and Martha, it's gotten beyond Jesus, it's escaped him, and now he's dead. There's nothing the Lord can do about it. So you'll see this in the cries that come out from both of them. They had been talking about this. Jesus did no visitation. Didn't visit him. Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. You hear it? Why weren't you here? Why didn't you come? My first dilemma tonight as a pastor when I read this text, why did they have to be put through that? Fair question? Why did they have to be put through that? Why do we have to see these things? I'm a believer. I trust Christ. He's forgiven me. Why does God pass us through these moments? Why does God pass us through the valley of Baca? Why does God put us through this valley of weeping? It's similar to this morning, isn't it? Why that? The answer is, not home yet. I'm not home. And I believe it's right, as one pastor said, the very thought of death, bereavement through death, the feeling of sickness and suffering and the consciousness of approaching death, all has a very beneficial effect on the people of God. How so? They serve to humble the proud, mortify the flesh, check worldliness, foster spiritual mindedness. Martha and Mary want answers, and you know that's the best place for people often to be. And what I see is that initially Mary and Martha are struggling to live by what Jesus said. Why? Because now they're feeling the pain of the loss. He died. It's over. It's irreparable. So the great dilemma that they're confronted with is to live by what Jesus said, even though reality has overwhelmed me. It doesn't seem to correspond. It doesn't seem to fit. She says, I know, Lord, even now that this has happened, I know that whatever you ask of God, God will give it to you. Jesus calls her to faith. Your brother Lazarus is going to rise again. I love that statement. He will rise again. I know, Lord. I know he's going to rise at the resurrection of the last day. I believe that. I believe that he will rise again at the resurrection of the last day. You told us that back in chapter 5. Remember, most assuredly I say to you, he who hears my word and believes in him who sent me has everlasting life and shall not come into judgment, but has passed from death into life. Most assuredly I say to you, the hour is coming and now is when the dead will hear the voice of the Son of God, and those who hear will live, for the hour is coming in which all who are in the graves will hear his voice and come forth. Those who have done good to the resurrection of life. I know that, Lord. I believe that. I believe that. I trust that. But why did he have to go early? See what she's struggling with. They understand this. She has yet to grasp the significance of the why. And we don't always have answers to the why. The answer the Lord gives in this text is, for the Christian, it'll always be for the glory of God. In this context, Jesus gives the most powerful gospel declaration and the call to faith in the midst of these times. In other words, can the good shepherd defeat death? Can the good shepherd overcome this one? It's the grand moment, isn't it? You know, Jesus says to her, I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me, though he may die, he shall live. And whoever lives and believes in me shall never die. Now, he didn't just leave it at that. What did he say? Do you believe this? You believe it. You believe that, what I just said. In one sweeping promise, Jesus took upon himself all power and the responsibility to swallow up death in victory. I'm going to do that. I am the resurrection. I am the one in whom there is life. And though one may die, he shall live. Whoever believes in me is never going to ultimately die. What a promise. I can't leave, you know. That's something you cling to every day as a Christian. Whoever believes in me, says Jesus, there's no hell. There's no eternal judgment. You're going to live forever with me in glory. And the penetrating question that Jesus wants us to really think about is, do you believe this, Mary? Do you believe this, Martha? Do we believe this today? You see, Jesus didn't raise Lazarus and say, now believe. See? It's not what he did. He didn't even do that after Thomas. He said, no, blessed are those who believe and don't see. He wanted us to believe without seeing. And that's the way to move forward in the light of death. It's the only way to move forward in the light of death, you know? Unless I had believed, said the psalmist, I would have fainted. Many of you who've lost loved ones can say that. The only reason I can get through this is because I believe the gospel. There's no other answer. There's no other way to go forward. It's only the gospel of Christ. That's it. Without faith, people go through life frantically. They have bitter spirits. And they call into question God's goodness, his wisdom. Is God good? That kind of anger with those questions destroys people all the time. Jesus told us these things here are ordered for God's glory, and that in him, since he is the resurrection, that sadness will be turned to joy. Has to be. Sorrow comes in the night, but joy comes in the morning. So what happens? Jesus looks upon all their weeping, which is very real, and he looks upon it, and we read one of the most moving statements given in the scripture in verse 33, that he groaned in spirit and was troubled. That word groaned is really fascinating in the Greek. It's a big, long word. It means to express deep anger, agitation. He is deeply agitated. Deep agitation. And then you read verse 35 that he wept. The implication here is that Jesus felt, Jesus experienced, Jesus knew. He knew the agony taking on our human nature of what? Seeing the sin destroy those whom he loved, looking upon that, the overwhelming agitation and righteous anger came upon him that had happened to his eternal objects of love.
The
Abounding Grace Radio is brought to you by Abounding Grace Radio Ministries. We are indeed a listener-supported program. We're always thankful that you take the time to tune into Abounding Grace. So do please go to our website at agradio.org to learn more about who we are and what we believe. Thanks for taking the time to tune in. May the gospel continue to richly bless you.
Hi, I'm Pastor Chris Gordon, the preaching pastor here at the Escondido United Reformed Church. If you like what you've heard today on Abounding Grace Radio, we do give you a sincere invite to join us for worship. 9:30 a.m. and 6 o'clock p.m. are the worship service times on Sundays. You can go to our website to learn more about who we are and what we believe. EscondidoURC.org. 1864 North Broadway is our address here in Escondido. The Escondido United Reformed Church, a place where the Bible is sincerely believed and faithfully taught.